She's going to just sit in this wonderful chair and share her thoughts with us. And I think you'll all share my gratitude tonight. Let's give it up for Lindy.
Thank you, Barbara. I, too, am thankful for my spiritual family. And when Millie asked me if I would speak tonight, I knew two things. I knew, one, she'd be out of town. And two, I'd probably be talking about thankful things, Thanksgiving being tomorrow. Now, it's almost too easy to talk about Thanksgiving in the night before Thanksgiving. So I wanted to take a little different spin on it. I want to tell some of my favorite stories, which many of you have heard before, but like a good Mozart symphony, it bears listening to more than once. And I want to spin them into things I'm thankful for, because I'm thankful for so many things as I sit here tonight. Let's start out with a story of a little girl who was told that 2 + 2 = 4. And she said, no, it doesn't. And somebody said, yes, 2 + 2 always = 4. She said, no, 2 raindrops + 2 raindrops = a puddle. And the lesson that I get from this story is that things are not always as they seem. Take, for example, my outfit. You probably think that I planned to wear these trousers and this sweater, because they do indeed go together, better than most of the things in my wardrobe, I will say. But no, things are not always as they seem. What actually happened is I dripped my lunch all over my shirt, and I'm thankful that I had this sweater in the car to fall back on. Things are not always as they seem. Another one of my favorite stories is the story, which may or may not be true, I don't know, but I heard it as a story, that when Christopher Columbus sailed into the West Indies and set his ship to anchor off the shore, the natives of those islands did not see Christopher Columbus's ship, which wasn't the Queen Mary, but it was still larger than they had ever seen before, and therefore they had no context in which to recognize it as a ship. It wasn't until the men got into the small boats and paddled to the shore that the natives saw that there was something there. Now, I understand that the tribal medicine man probably recognized that it was a big ship, but none of the natives knew that it was, because they didn't have, as I said, a context in which to recognize it. Now, aren't expectations like that sometimes? We can only expect that for which we have a context already in place, which means we can't expect miracles because we don't necessarily know that miracles can happen. Now, some of us do know that, having experienced miracles in our own lives. But wouldn't it be nice if we would not limit our expectations to those things that we already know can happen? What if we were to set our sights on things that we don't know can happen, but that can happen anyway? And I'm thankful for that, my knowledge of the law of limiting expectations, because I had an expectation with regards to my physical health that something could happen. I didn't know what, but I knew something could happen to make it better. And sure enough, yesterday I met with an orthopedic surgeon who said that I have a big, bad herniated disc. And big and bad were his words, not mine. So big and bad that he offered me surgery on my first visit, which he said he doesn't usually do. But I will be surgically repaired in the next few months, hopefully weeks, possibly days. And this is outside of my realm of experience, but within the realm of expecting beyond what I know. So let's not limit ourselves to things that we know. Let's believe that things that we don't know can happen and see what happens. And Thanksgiving is a good time to do that, too, because we can give thanks for all that we do know, as well as giving thanks for those things which we invite into our lives that we aren't aware of yet. Another one of my favorite stories is about the monk who was being chased by tigers, and he ran to the edge of the cliff, and there was nowhere to go, and he looked down, and there were bears at the bottom of the cliff. But there was a vine on the cliff, and so he climbed down the vine and hung suspended halfway between the tigers and the bears. And he looked up, and right beside him on the vine, there was the most perfect strawberry he'd ever seen. And he plucked it, and he ate it, and it was delicious. Now, that story could possibly bring to mind lots of themes or lessons that we can learn from it, but I like to use it for the lesson of being here now. Sometimes we're so afraid of the tigers that are chasing us from the past, or so afraid of the bears that are waiting us in the future, that we forget to savor the moment, which is the perfect strawberry. It's like that saying that the past is a canceled check, the future is a promissory note, but today is cash. So, you know, be careful how you spend it. Be here now. Pay attention to what is happening in the moment, not in the future or the past. Now, of course, I'm very aware of the moment because in the moment, I am almost always in pain. And that's been true for the last 3.5 months. I have, as I said, a big bad herniated disc, but it started out as simple sciatica and grew into agonizing pain on a regular basis. But it's too much to focus on the pain that started in August. It's too much to focus on the future, which will involve a reduction in that pain, hopefully an elimination of that pain, when now is where I am and who I am. I'm Lindy in this moment with all of you. I'm living with my pain, and by the way, when I'm sitting, I'm not feeling it. Thank you, God. I'm thankful that I have a way to be a position that I can be in where there is no pain. I'm thankful for a past that involved a cruise to Alaska, even with the pain. I'm thankful for the future where the pain will be eliminated by surgery. And I'm thankful that I'm aware of the present moment when I'm with all of you in this house of love. So that's another one of my favorite stories. A story that I collected when I was probably about 13 had such an impact on me that I tell it every chance I get, basically. And it's a story called The Golden Windows. And in this story, there's a young boy whose name, for whatever reason, is always David, probably because that's the way I collected the story. Young David is a boy of about 7 or 8, and he lives in a house high on the hill overlooking the valley. And every morning when he gets up, he looks across the valley, and he sees the golden windows of the houses on the other side of the valley. Now, David doesn't have a really bad life, but he has a life that could be better. And every morning he gets up and he sees those golden windows, and he thinks, if only he lived in a house with golden windows, his life would be perfect. So one morning, young David decides that he's going to walk all the way across the valley to the houses with the golden windows to test out his theory that it will make his life better. So he sets off across the valley, and because he's just a small boy and because it's a fairly large valley, it takes him all day to get to the other side. And sure enough, when he gets close to those houses on the other side of the valley, they don't have golden windows at all. Their windows are plain glass. And he turns around to look back at his house, and in the light of the afternoon sun, his house has golden windows. That story always gives me shivers. Yeah. Because so many times we're looking for that greener grass on the other side of the fence. We're looking for those golden windows on the other side of the valley. And you know what? There is no better than here. The grass is greener where you water it. And I'm thankful that I am watering my grass in this context, in this room with these people. I'm thankful that I understand the lesson that where I am is where I need to be and where I want to be. And I don't need to be somewhere else or I would be there. It's very simple, really. I recognize that the golden windows are inside of me and inside of you all rather than across the hill. We bring to our lives that which makes those windows golden. We bring to our lives the love and the friendships and the caring and the giving and the sharing that makes us members of this church or participants in it, if not members. Golden Windows is a story about not recognizing what you have when you have it, and about acknowledging it when you find that out. And I'm thankful for that story and all the opportunities I've had to share it and all the ways it brings meaning to my life. Another one of my favorite stories comes from a children's book that was published in the 1950s called Paddle to the Sea. Paddle to the Sea is a story about a young Native American boy in Canada, north of the Great Lakes, who carves an Indian sitting in a canoe. And on the bottom, he carves, "I am paddled to the sea. Please put me back in water." And then he sits the carved canoe with the Indian boy in it at the side of a stream that is currently frozen because he carved it in the winter. And as the spring thaw comes, the Indian in the canoe takes off down the rushing meltwaters and ends up in the Great Lakes. And Paddle to the Sea has adventures during his journey through the Great Lakes. He, for example, gets stuck in the bark of a tree that's picked up by a sawmill and is about to be cut in half. And the sawmill operator sees the little Indian canoe coming towards him on the saw, and he stops the saw and rescues the canoe and the little Indian boy that's in it. And he reads the bottom and it says, "Please put me back in water, for I am paddled to the sea." And so he does, puts the little boat back in the water, and it goes on its merry way. And the paddle to the sea gets stuck along a beach in one of the Great Lakes, and he's up there caught in some driftwood, and some hikers, beachcombers, come along and see the painted color of the little boat and recognize that it's something other than plain, ordinary driftwood. And they pick him up and read the bottom, and it says, "Please put me back in water, for I am paddled to the sea." And they do. They put him back in the water. And he, for example, goes over Niagara Falls. At some point during his journey, somebody thinks, "This is silly. This boat's going to be so well traveled that the words on the bottom are going to be eroded by wind and water." So they put a little brass plate on there. It says, "I am paddled to the sea, please put me back in water, and write down where you found me," so that etched the cities and places that he visited on that they know of after he got the copper plate on the bottom of him, to commemorate his visits to their towns. Eventually, Paddle to the Sea makes it all the way out the St. Lawrence Seaway and across the Atlantic, and is found in on the coast of France. And he still has the little sign on the bottom that says, "Please put me back in water, for I am paddled to the sea." Now, that's a wonderful children's story, and the illustrations in the book were Newbery Award winners. It's just a phenomenal story in and of itself as a work of fiction. It captured my fancy so much, I have to confess I read it when I was a kid. Yes, I was a kid in the 50s. I'm still a kid. I'm just not in my 50s. But for me, Paddle to the Sea is a metaphor for spiritual life, because none of us can do it alone. We need somebody, God or friends or relatives or people who care about us, to put us back in the water when we get stuck on the shoals and shores of life. When we're in the sawmill about to be cut in half, we need someone to recognize that we're in need and to take care of us, to help us. When I'm limping with a cane because I have a bad back, I truly appreciate my friends who say, "What can I do for you?" or "Can I help you with that six-pack of water?" or "Can I open the door for you?" Those small courtesies are not unappreciated and unnoticed, because I am paddled to the sea and I need you to put me back in the water. It's also a metaphor for a spiritual journey, because we're all paddling to the sea being the ocean of God's love. We all want to end up in the same place with God, right? We'd like to end up there sooner rather than later. It'd be good if we could be there now. Back to the strawberry. Be there now in the ocean of God's love. But we can't do it alone, is the moral of this story for me. No one can do it alone. The wisest man I ever knew said, life is a 1.5-person job. Think about it. Think about it. If you have to carry a stretcher with a person on it, there better be somebody at the other end, or you're going to be in big trouble. Or so will the person on the stretcher, I guess, be in bigger trouble. But if we remember that we need each other and reach out when opportunity arises, then we are putting our friends and family back in the water. We are helping them paddle to their sea. We're helping ourselves paddle to our sea of God's love. We're acting on God's love, being God's love, using God's love. And I'm thankful that I learned this lesson and have had an opportunity to share with my friends and my family some of my beliefs and to share the love that I feel for them and for you. My final story is one that I only read, I guess, within the last year or so. I tried out some new stories here about a year ago, and one of them actually stuck. It got the thumbs up from the audience. The others were kind of, you know, whatever. But this is a story about a farmer who had a cantankerous mule, and he got so fed up with the mules not paying attention to him that he decided to bury the mule in the well. So he pushed the mule into the well, and the mule went down about 20 feet and landed on his 4 feet at the bottom of the well. And then the farmer started shoveling dirt in, thinking that he was going to bury the mule alive and he would never have to act on this mule anymore, ever again. But what happened? The farmer threw a shovel full of dirt in and the mule shook it off and stepped up. The farmer threw in another shovel full of dirt. The mule shook it off and stepped up. This kept happening. The farmer kept shoveling. The mule kept shaking it off and stepping up. Guess what? The mule walked out of the well. Well, think about it. If we were to shake it off and step up every time somebody dumps a shovel full of dirt on us, we'd be happier and healthier and in a whole lot better place, wouldn't we? We'd walk out of that well. I have experienced the darkness of depression, and to some degree still am, I suppose, on occasion. It's not something that goes away. It can get better, but it doesn't ever leave you. And one of the things that allows me to work and walk and live, even while depressed, is the ability to shake it off and step up. Because I would rather have a life than be a victim of depression. As much as depression wants to victimize us, it's up to us if we let it. And if we can remember, be like the dumb mule who didn't know any better, to shake it off and step up, then we can keep walking out of the well every time we fall in it. And I'm thankful that I've learned that lesson and that story because it has true meaning for me. It gives me insight into how to keep on keeping on. And I alluded to the fact that I went on a cruise while I had really bad back. Well, you know, a cruise ship is 900 feet long. At least the one we were on was 900 feet long. And the dining room's at one end, right? And the Pharaoh's Theater is at the other. And you're always going to be in one place or the other, the dining room or the theater. Because everything on the ship happens either in the dining room or the theater. Now, I say everything on the ship. I suppose there are some smaller rooms in between, but everything we wanted to do was in the dining room or the theater. We wanted to eat. We wanted to be entertained. We wanted to eat. We wanted to eat again. For those of you who've been on a cruise, you know what I'm talking about. So I would get up. Our stateroom was amidships, so it was halfway from either one of them, right in the middle. I would get up. I would be in excruciating pain, quite honestly. You know, I used to think I had a high pain tolerance, and then I discovered with this episode of sciatica / herniated disc, I just never had high pain before. So, I would force myself, because I wanted to eat, and I had half a shift to get to the dining room, to walk in pain. And thank you, God, I'm thankful for the fact that after walking about two lengths to the ship, the pain went away and stayed gone for a few hours even. This was back in the early days of my sciatica. But I could do that. I could go all the way to the dining room, and about halfway there sometimes the pain would stop, and then I would sit down at the table and there'd be no pain, and then I'd get up from the table and there'd be excruciating pain again, and I'd have to walk to the theater. But, you know, by then I knew that if I got to the theater, the pain would be gone and I'd get to sit down again anyway, so there wouldn't be any pain there either. The point I'm making is we can do what we must, or we can do what we want to, or we can do what we will to do. Now, I went on a canoe trip on the ship in Ketchikan, Alaska, and the guide's name was Will, and he said, I'm certified rescue diver canoeing in a canoe with 20 people. That's helpful. Save me first, Will. Certified rescue diver, certified CPR, certified lifeguard, certified this, certified that, every kind of certification that anyone in that position would need or want. And I said to him, so, where there's a will, there's a way, huh? And you guys got it. He had to think about it a little bit. Nobody ever said that to him before. But the point is, where there's a will, there is a way, and we can have the will to shake it off and step up and walk out of the well. So I'm thankful for that insight. And finally, in conclusion, finally they say, I'm thankful for the opportunity to share my thoughts with you all. I'm thankful for being a member of this spiritual family, for having some great friends in this group, for the opportunity to sing songs like Praise the Lord, I Saw the Light. I'm thankful for Thanksgiving, for an opportunity to remind us to say thank you every day. And thank you for giving me this time.
Well, thank you.